The Pledge of Allegiance will be offered by Mr. Isham.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. First item.
I'd like to call up the Representative Edming, who will introduce the tribal chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today is indeed an honor for me. Not only is the tribal chairman an acquaintance of mine, but one of the color guards, Steve Perrion. We went to high school together at Flambeau High School, so today is really a super day. But I'd like to introduce to you today a very popular guy. His name is Michael Mick Isham Jr. And Mick, as everyone calls him, is chairman of the Lacouturay Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. He is also chairman of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. And he is also vice chairman of the Voight Intertribal Task Force, and he is also chairman of the WOJB Radio Directors, which is one of the stations that I like to listen to on Saturday evening, the Honky Tonk Show. It's old time. It is just absolutely an awesome, awesome, awesome radio program. Mick also is president of the Lacouturay Boys and Girls Club. And he is also a member of the U.S. EPA's Great Lakes Advisory Board. And he also coaches the Hayward Youth football, baseball, basketball, and soccer teams. And I'd like to present to you Mick Isham Buzo Nichi, which is welcome, friend.
Wow. What do I do in my spare time, huh? In Dinaway Maganadug, all my relations, Ogama Banes Indijinakas, the head thunderbird is my Ojibwe name, Migazi Ndorem, I am from the Eagle Clan, Odawa Zagayaganing and Dunjaba, I am from Odawa Lake. That's what we call our home, Odawa Lake. But the French called it Lacouturay, meaning Lake of the Short Ears, from the fact that we didn't wear earrings. So like the other tribes they encountered, their earlobes were stretched. So somehow that name stuck, and we are now known as what's in the Federal Register, the Lake Superior Band of Lacouturay of Chippewa Indians. First thing, I'd like to ask the boss here, Chief Clerk Pat Fuller, to maybe give a verbal warning to those that were late. You're supposed to start at 1. I'm just joking. I know what's going on here. They were like calling a timeout in football to ice the kicker to try to make me nervous. It worked. So hope I don't shank it like that Minnesota kicker. Yeah. Already a Viking joke, huh? So, good afternoon, Speaker Voss, President Lazich, members of the Senate, members of the State Assembly, constitutional officers, cabinet secretaries, justices of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and other honored guests. On behalf of the 11 tribal nations in Wiscosset, I want to thank you for this opportunity to address you all today. Wiscosuck is a Menominee word for a good place to live. Today it is now known as Wisconsin, and I know we all agree that in fact it is a very good place to live. We have Ogama representing all 11 tribal nations with us today. Ogama is an Ojibwe word for chief, headman, chairman, president, or boss. Today we have with us Vice Chairman, Melinda Danforth of the Oneida Nation. President Shannon Holsey of the Stockbridge Muncie Mohican Nation. Chris McGeejik of the Sakagan Nation. Butch St. Germain from the Lac des Flambeaux Nation. Joan Delabrew of the Menominee Nation. Brian Bainbridge of the Red Cliff Nation. We have Mike DeCora here representing the St. Croix Nation. Robert Buzz Blanchard of the Bad River Nation. Councilman Brooks Boyd, Forest County Potawatomi Nation. And we have President Wilford Cleveland from the ground we stand on here, the Ho-Chunk Nation. I'm humbled and honored to be speaking on your behalf today. Now I would advise you all to get comfortable. Those who know me know I'm a man of few words, but I don't often get a chance to speak to so many influential people, and I want to discuss as many issues as possible in this short 3-hour speech. Not quite 3 hours. But anyway, better get comfortable. I want to acknowledge the elders, as is our custom. They've amassed priceless knowledge of survival and continually pass it down to us, which aids us every single day in all of our journeys. Chi-Migwech, a big thank you to our elders for the path that you have blazed for us. Thank you, elders. I want to also recognize the First Lady of Lac-Couturier, Karen Bright. Wave your hand, come on. She bears a bit of the brunt of the mean-spirited political attacks that occur every day as a result of my position, and Facebook has made it much worse. And I know everybody on this floor understand what I'm saying. So I want to acknowledge her for putting up with that and say thank you. Thank you, Karen. Next to her is my son, Ian. He's a freshman at the Hayward High School. He's the star right tackle for our freshman football team. His nickname is Pancake for all the people he puts flat on their back. So the Badgers better be talking to him right now. Sign him right now. A lesser father would brag. I also want to recognize a few other dignitaries that are here. Some of my tribal governing board members are here with us today. I see Norma Ross, our secretary treasurer. Rose Gokey, councilwoman. And Jason Schlender, councilman. And I know there's a lot of other tribal council people here from all the reservations. I want to recognize all of you and thank you for the work that you do. I also know that there's some feds in the house here today. We got representatives from Congressman Duffy's office, Senator Johnson, Senator Baldwin's office, and maybe a few more. Feds, can you raise your hand if you want to? Thank you for your work as well. I know that there's a BIA person, right? We got some BIA here today. I'm not up for re-election, so I can thank the BIA for the work that they're doing. I also want to recognize Mike Allen and Therese Stafford and their staff at GLITSI for helping organize this event. Thank you. And I also want to especially recognize our LCO elected representatives with the state government, James Edming and Senator Jerry Petrowski. I would also like to specially recognize a couple ladies, one of whom is in the room today. Supreme Court Justice Shirley Abramson, I don't think could make it today. And also Ada Deer, she's here, right? Ada? There. I'm not sure what Ada's current profession is. I think she's in training now to fight Conor McGregor in the UFC heavyweight title. My money's on Ada. A few years back, my daughter Monica had the opportunity to speak to these ladies about going to college and maybe someday becoming a lawyer. Those ladies took the time to encourage her to pursue higher education. And Justice Abramson displayed an awesome example of a strong woman reaching the height of the legal profession. She was Chief Justice of the Supreme Court at the time. And she said to Monica, "If I can do it, then you can do it too." I can still hear Ada's voice when she told my daughter, "You go for it, honey, and don't let anyone or anything get in your way." Well, I just would like to proudly report to you that Monica just recently graduated from Marquette Law School with honors. Yeah. This past year, she started working for a top family law firm up in Ashland, Wisconsin. Monica wanted to be here today to thank you both in person, but this world can't seem to get along without their lawyers. She is watching on Wisconsin Eye, though, so thank you for those encouraging words. All the tribes here can boast similar success stories about their people, which of course rarely ever make the press. It seems like the bad kids or the bad stories about our reservations make the paper routinely. So contrary to what some believe, the tribes have many tribal citizens that serve as role models, not just for Indian people, but for all people. We have tribal citizens with bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, PhDs. LCO tribal member Robert Kaigagibi is a medical doctor. Paco Freilich, a Flambeau member, is a dentist. Bronson Koenig is a star basketball player with our Wisconsin Badgers. He is from Ho-Chunk. We have a multitude of engineers, architects, lawyers, teachers, and professors. Joe Dan Rose, a Bad River member, is an expert fisheries biologist whose data I would put up against any fisheries biologist in the country. We have successful entrepreneurs such as Dave Anderson from La Coup d'Oreille. You may know him as Famous Dave, the Rib King. We're very proud of him. We have EMTs, firefighters, and police officers. My sister Michelle Martin is an officer that puts her life on the line and protects and serves in Whitewater, Wisconsin, right near here. She's here with us today. Michelle, can you wave? She thinks because she's a cop, she can take me now, but I don't think so. We even have movie stars. Appa Sonoquat from the Menominee Nation and Sheila Tozzi from the Menominee and Stockbridge Muncie Mohican Nation are successful Hollywood actors. Patty Lowell, a Bad River member, is a famous local TV personality. Electa Kinney, a Stockbridge Muncie, was the very first professional public school teacher in Wisconsin history. We almost had two more movie stars. Ryan Greendeer and Chairman McGeesick tried out for the leading role in Zoolander as male models. For some reason, they didn't get the part. I don't know why. Tribal people are succeeding in all aspects of society just like non-Indian people do. I want to acknowledge my son, McCoons. He's up there. He did our Pledge of Allegiance today. Michael Isham III. Last year, he won a Veterans Day essay contest, and as a result of the win, he had to speak in front of several large audiences, so I figured he could handle this minor gig today. His winning essay was about his grandfather, my father, and his experience in the war in Vietnam. It was gripping. The essay brought back the feelings I had when my father was away and we weren't sure if he was ever coming home. Fortunately, he did come home, and I'd like to recognize him in the audience today. Dad, can you please wave? I'm a man of no emotion like Spock, but that one almost got me there. I'd like to take this time to thank and recognize all veterans for their service to our country and state. Something that many of you already know, but some may not, is the fact that Native Americans have served in the U.S. military in greater numbers than any other ethnic group and have since the Revolutionary War. We step forward when duty calls. Today in the audience, I have three shining examples of heroic service by Lacouture tribal citizens. We have Army Air Corps Private First Class Bertha Smith Christensen, who served in World War II. Bertha, she's over there. We also have U.S. Navy Seaman First Class Louis Gouge Sr., who served on the USS Yorktown in World War II. We also have Navy Signalman Second Class Daryl Kuhn Sr. He served in the South Pacific in World War II. Daryl. One other LCO World War II veteran was unable to be with us today, U.S. Navy Petty Officer Richard Smith. He fought at Iwo Jima. Then he went on to become a sergeant in the U.S. Army and served in the Korean War as well. We have Purple Heart recipients, Bronze Star recipients, and also POWs. All 11 tribal nations can provide examples of heroic service to our country. I've recently been made aware that an assembly committee was considering a bill that would change the role of county veteran service offices. We are in a time when there's an increase in demand for services. It's extremely important that we remain vigilant in not only maintaining the current delivery of benefits, but also seek additional resources to effectively serve our veterans. Our tribal veterans rely heavily on our county veteran service office and call on the assembly to protect and enhance these offices. Many people know about the tribes as they exist today and our contributions to the state and country, but many do not. Stereotypes, misconceptions, and myths about tribes and our citizens persist. The questions I get sometimes from seemingly well-educated people when I'm in meetings in Washington, D.C., Madison, speaking at colleges, and from the general public can be jaw-dropping. I can't count the number of times I've been asked if we still live in teepees and ride horses. The Ojibwe people never did live in teepees. We lived in wigwams. Some tribes use teepees and some use longhouses, as each tribe is separate and unique. While some tribal people maintain a wigwam or teepee for cultural or spiritual purposes, today we live in houses and drive cars. I myself drive a pretty manly Prius. We are a highly adaptable people. I used to get a bit perturbed at those questions, but over time I learned that usually the questions are not meant to be insulting, but merely the fact that those individuals really know very little about the tribes as we exist today. Now when I get the question, do you still ride horses and live in teepees, I respond back with the question, do you still drive a stagecoach and live in a trapper shack? Then they usually understand after that one. Sometimes the questions are mean-spirited though and meant as insults. One such comment, which seems to be a talking point of the anti-treaty establishment, and I've heard fairly often over the years, is, I really don't have a problem with your treaty rights, but why do you use a metal spear and an aluminum boat? You should spear from a birch bark canoe and use a wooden spear like you all did when you signed the treaty. My response to that comment is, there are two parties to the treaties, the U.S. and the tribes. You signed the treaty too. Why should one party to the treaty stop in time and not the other party? If we have to use birch bark canoes and wooden spears to harvest fish, then you must harvest wheat with a sickle and till your field with a horse. Another mean-spirited comment I hear repeatedly is, you don't even know your own language. While this is not true, as Niju Sullivan showed this afternoon when he did our invocation for us. As was said, Niju is a 12-year-old and in sixth grade and speaks our language proficiently as all his classmates do. Niju goes to our LCO K-12 school, which has a language immersion education track. It's called Waduka Dotting. You're kind of close. And that means helping each other. The Wadukadotting kids sang at Governor Walker's inauguration, singing Somebody to Love by Queen and Lazy by Bruno Mars entirely in the Chippewa language and in perfect harmony, I may add. Niju and his little brother Preston sang for President Obama last year at the Tribal White House Summit. They brought the crowd to their feet. The normal protocol of playing the melody, Hail to the Chief, when the president leaves the stage was suspended. Niju and Preston had the honor of hand drumming and singing as the president exited. B'madazimagut Ojibwe Mowin, our language is alive and well. Our languages survive today despite the millions of dollars and concerted effort by the federal government to eradicate them. I remember back in the 1980s when the anti-treaty protests were occurring across northern Wisconsin. The late, great Walt Brissett from the Red Cliff Nation was confronted with that comment by a hateful protester. When he said, "You don't even know your own language, Indian," Walt replied, "Yes, I know my language, and I know yours too." Sometimes I still hear us referred to as pagans. The dictionary defines pagan as irreligious or of a religion that is other than those of the main world religions. In some cases, tribal citizens are of a religion other than the main world religion. But we are not and never were irreligious. Today we practice religion in much the same manner as the general population of the United States. We have a lot of tribal people that practice native religions. We also have people that belong to a wide variety of churches that line the streets of America today. We have Baptists, Lutherans, Jehovah's Witnesses, Jews, Muslim, and all the other rest there that I, too many to name. I myself went to Catholic schools in Milwaukee for over 6 years. I'm what they call a recovering Catholic. Although I'm not sure if I'll ever recover from that. Those nuns were pretty mean. Some people must have went there too. I think I could take a couple of those nuns now, but I'm not sure. They weren't all mean, though. They educated me well. Sister Felissa from the St. Francis Indian Mission in Reserve, I didn't go to school there, but hung out there for sports. She was mean. She was like 182-0, her fight record. But she was also funny, and she told me one of my favorite Viking jokes there that I'd like to share. She said, "Why do the Vikings play in a dome?" "Because even God don't want to see him play." I seen a guy in a Viking hat. I know he's not clapping. We are not pagans. While I'm at it, I'd like to attempt to debunk a few other myths and misconceptions that seem to persist about Native people. Tribes are not all rich from casinos. Some are doing quite well, and we are very proud of them. However, most of us, especially in the rural areas, are certainly not rich. The myth about Indian people getting free education is completely false. It took me 10 years to pay off my student loans. My daughter Monica has almost $200,000 in student debt. Bronson Koenig, a Ho-Chunk citizen, he may be getting a free education at UW, but he works his tail off for that athletic scholarship, and if he keeps whooping Illinois like he did a couple weeks ago, I think we're all okay with that. Yeah. The myth about that tribal people barely vote, that one's not true either. We sure do vote, and in higher numbers every year. In fact, we make the winning difference in many cases. I also hear that when we vote, we only vote Democrat. That's not true either. Former Senator Bob Jauch, a Democrat, received full support from the coup d'etat. Mark Kelsey, a Republican, received our full support for Story County Sheriff. Senator Janet Buley, a Democrat, received our full support. Some of you may remember Dave Zien, kind of a low-key Republican. He received our full support. Representative Beth Myers, a Democrat, received our support. And the Honorable Judge Yackel, a Republican, received our full support for Sawyer County Judge, although he recently disclosed to us that he is a Minnesota Viking fan. Good thing he didn't tell us that before the election. We support people who support us, no matter what party they are affiliated with, Republican, Democrat, Green, or Independent, sometimes Viking, never bear. The reason these individuals have received our support is because they visit us. They attend our events, not just during campaign season, but throughout the year. They meet regularly with our tribe in a government-to-government relationship. They get coffee or tea in our Ojibwe Java coffee shop. They serve on some of our boards, like the LCO Boys and Girls Club. They talk with our people and know us and our issues. Doesn't mean we always agree, but they know us. Recently, Le Coup d'Etat has been redistricted without any consultation or input from us. We're still quite upset about this, mostly because of the no consultation. My advice to anyone who wants to represent a district that has a tribe in it, and I say this with all due respect, if you want our support, then follow those examples that I just mentioned. Unless you believe the myth that we don't vote. One candidate who unsuccessfully ran against Bob Jauch many times finally came to the realization that the tribal support for Senator Jauch was impactful, so she came and visited us. I asked her, why, after all these election cycles, did you finally come and visit? She said that she was quite frankly afraid. We said, afraid of what? She said she'd always heard that if you get a flat tire on the res, just keep on driving or you could be in danger. I could not believe what she said. Again, we replied, in danger of what? And she wouldn't be specific. She didn't get our support. So I'm here to tell you that if you're driving on any one of our reservations and you get a flat tire, what is the most likely scenario is that someone will stop and help you change your tire. Or give you a ride to the casino. These myths, as well as others, highlight the need for greater education. Act 31 was passed in 1989-1991 biennium budget bill to do just that. But I'm not convinced that it's being as effective as we had hoped. I'm not convinced that schools across the state are complying with Act 31. I would like to call on the Tribal State Relations Committee to consider adding an enforcement mechanism to Act 31. The issue of teaching tribal history, living history, not just the 1700s and 1800s, but the 1900s and as we exist today, it's extremely important to the tribes, as we know this will improve tribal, state, and community relations. We were heartened recently by the demise of AB 620, which would have resulted in the desecration of burial and effigy mounds. All of Wisconsin's tribes stand with our Ho-Chunk relatives in their opposition to this bill. For us Ojibwe, we experienced firsthand the effects of an education system that failed to properly educate and inform our neighbors about whom we are as Native people, about our origins, about our history, and about our identity. We were objectivized and victimized. We felt the pain of rocks and ball bearings slung from slingshots at northern Wisconsin boat landings simply because we were lawfully and peacefully exercising our constitutionally protected treaty rights. At LCO, the flooding of the Chippewa and Chief Rivers destroyed our villages and burial sites. There were times when the bones of our ancestors were being washed up on the shores of what is now known as the beautiful Chippewa flowage. AB 620 rekindled those excruciating memories for us. It sends the wrong message and would reinvigorate the types of misinformed attitudes, stereotyping, and hateful behavior that we saw at the boat landings and in our schools back in the 1980s. Big thank you to the representatives for that were responsible for killing that bill. With stronger education about tribal history and culture, we believe these types of issues will arise less often. To highlight how things can and should work in our education system, I want to acknowledge the superintendent for the Hayward Community School District, Craig Olson, and touch on a few of the things he's initiated in the Hayward schools. Mr. Olson, where are you at? There he is. Win the day. Mr. Olson makes sure that the kids in our schools get instruction about tribal history, tribal reserved rights, and culture as outlined in Act 31, but he goes beyond that. He hires local tribal citizens as staff to do the teaching. He brings in tribal entrepreneurs, tribal leaders, and tribal people from a wide variety of professions to make presentations to the students. Through meetings of the Indian Parent Advisory Committee, and meetings with tribal government officials, we've come up with many other initiatives to promote a true understanding between Native and non-Native people of our community and put to rest any misconceptions that have persisted throughout the years. Sports have been a tried and true method of improving relations between cultures, kind of like when President Nixon sent over Forrest Gump to play ping pong. Oh, rough one. Okay, it wasn't Forrest. But ping pong did help open up diplomacy between the United States and China, for those of us old enough to remember that. Mr. Olson has opened up all sports programs at the Hayward schools to students from our tribal school. In many cases, we have our own teams, such as basketball. However, we don't have a football team. We do now. The Hayward team is now the LCO Hayward football team. It does wonders for community relationships, having the bleachers filled up with Indian and non-Indian families all cheering together. The initiative that I believe that has had the biggest impact, though, is when Mr. Olson set up a bus tour for his entire staff and administration to visit our reservation. Four big yellow school buses visited our tribal government, tribal K through 12 school, the LCO Boys and Girls Club, and the LCO Ojibwe Community College. One bus went to each place, then after 45 minutes or so, they would all switch places so everyone got everywhere. Questions such as some of those reoccurring myths were answered. Mr. Olson will tell you about staff members here and there saying, "I thought we were going to see teepees." In fact, our LCO Boys and Girls Club, one of our directors, when she moved here, she said she thought she was going to see a whole bunch of teepees. I don't know what it is about those teepees there. They're not very heat efficient, I'm told. The comments about the tours that we received were tremendous. Many of them didn't know we had such beautiful facilities, didn't know we had a government, and if they did, they didn't know that it was constitutionally based government. We answered many questions during those tours. I challenge all superintendents across the state of Wisconsin to follow the example set by Mr. Olson and go beyond Act 31. This will improve tribal, state, and community relations. And I'd like to recognize the head of the Department of Public Instruction, Tony Evers, for his work as well. Thank you, Tony. Here's another myth, that the tribes and state, or the tribes and their neighbors, are locked in perpetual battle, that all we do is fight. This is false. While there are areas in which we do battle now and then, there are also many positive partnerships and initiatives that we are engaging in on a daily basis. The Menominee Nation and the state of Wisconsin DNR worked on a project to restore sturgeon populations in the Menominee River. The Ojibwe Nations and the Ho-Chunk Nation worked with the state DNR, U.S. Forest Service, and the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation to reestablish elk herds in our collective homelands, paid for by gaming dollars. Had to get that in. The Oneida Nation established a partnership with our Green Bay Packers. The Oneida Nation Gate is something the tribal citizens across Wisconsin are proud of. And the relationship between the Forest County Potawatomi and the Milwaukee Brewers also makes us proud. The Red Cliff Nation has worked with the feds and the state to establish the first tribal national park in Wisconsin. Those are just some examples of the partnerships with individual tribal nations. We have some collective partnerships going as well. The relationship between the tribal nations and the Department of Transportation is a very good and productive relationship. Thank you, Secretary Gottlieb. Yeah. The DOT has hired tribal citizens as staff to promote meaningful and reliable communication. The results from this dialogue resulted in several DOT initiatives. The WISDOT Tribal Task Force, Transportation Safety Programs, Cultural and Environmental Coordination, and the Statewide Native American Labor Initiatives are a few. Recently, WISDOT's Statewide Native American Labor Initiative is supporting two additional programs. They'll be delivered to the Red Cliff, Bad River, and LCO communities. This public-private tribal training model is called Transportation Alliance for New Solutions, or TRANS. TRANS successfully prepares Native people with the skills they need to contribute to the transportation construction industry as laborers and apprentices. WISDOT and the tribes have a very good relationship. I use it as an example with other agencies as to how we should work together. I would like to recognize DOT Secretary Mark Gottlieb and Tribal Liaison Kelly Jackson for their dedication to fostering that relationship. The tribal-state relationship with the Department of Tourism is another great one. Giving me the thumbs up there, Steph. Distracting. Tribal nations make huge positive economic impacts in this state, but I rarely ever hear that mentioned by state officials. I'll come back to that issue later. Department of Tourism Secretary Stephanie Klett is someone who does mention tribal impact, and we really do appreciate that. I hear her in speech after speech, and she makes a lot of them. She regularly reflects credit on the tribes for their positive economic impact on our state's tourism data. She'll point out that our contributions to tourism are not just in the gaming arena, like many people think. Our natural areas, lakes, rivers, resorts, and especially our culturally based attractions like powwows and museums are huge tourism draws. Thank you, Secretary Klett, for the acknowledgments that you give us and the time and effort that you put into maintaining our partnership. Thank you, Steph. Each tribe has their own individual tourism and marketing departments, but the tribes also have tourism initiatives that we do collectively through an organization called Native American Tourism of Wisconsin, or NATOW. The state tourism department is funded by $8,967,000 of tribal gaming compact revenue, almost $9 million. NATOW is funded by $200,000 of gaming revenue. I'd like to call on the representatives here to increase funding to NATOW up to $500,000 at least, and I can guarantee you that money will be used to increase cultural tourism, which in turn will benefit tribal and state treasuries alike. Here's another example of a great tribal-state partnership. This partnership is between all of the tribes and the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. We've been working on so many issues, I just don't have time to mention all of them, so I'll just highlight a few. We have partnered up to fight a federal battle. All of the tribal nations together with the DHS have been meeting with our federal counterparts in the executive and legislative branches of government to obtain support for a home and community-based waiver application that we've submitted to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. If approved, the waiver will enable tribes in our sovereign capacity to bill Medicare and Medicaid for services in the same manner in which states do. Doing this will save the tribes and the state money, which could be budgeted to meet other unmet health care needs. I want to acknowledge Secretary Kitty Rhodes, her staff, and all the tribal health directors and their staff for those efforts that will benefit us all. Kitty, where are you, Kitty? And you notice I didn't mention the Hudson dog track fight. For those who remember that. The tribes and the DHS are also working together on a problem that is having a negative effect across all sectors of our tribal and state populations. That issue is drugs and youth violence. The state and the tribes, with the Department of Justice, Attorney General's Office, Tribal State County Police, Native American Drug and Gang Initiative, Wisconsin DHS, Indian Health Service, Tribal Health Centers, and several other partners have been looking at this problem from all angles. The Prescription Drug Monitoring Program was a major step in working through complicated federal, state, and tribal jurisdictions. Individuals were taking one prescription and making the rounds of several pharmacies to obtain more medication than was prescribed. Those people would eventually be identified through pharmacy reporting requirements, but by that time they were long gone. With this new monitoring program, if a prescription was picked up, it would be entered into the computer and all the pharmacies were made aware of it instantly. Tribal, state, all pharmacies. If anyone tried to get that prescription filled anywhere else, the computer would alert the pharmacist and the medications would be denied. The pharmacy could also then alert the authorities. This initiative has stopped a lot of pills from hitting the streets. The data that we look at regarding kids and drugs clearly shows that a child who is involved in extracurricular activities is more likely to succeed than their peers who are not involved. We'd like to see more funding go to schools and boys and girls clubs so that they can provide sports, band, and other after-school activities. Sports, for example, is a tried and true anti-gang and anti-drug program. Due to funding issues, sports tend to be the first one that gets cut. Then the costs get passed on to the parents. What may happen then is only the families that can afford it can participate. Kids that need it the most, like those of single parent families, can be left out. Some families with more than one child find it almost impossible to bear that large financial burden. The cost to play hockey, which require a lot of equipment, could be well over $1,000. In my day, sports were free to families, and I'll say over and over, I believe sports are what kept me in school. Rural and Native American Boys and Girls Clubs struggle with funding issues. The reason for this is because Boys and Girls Clubs tend to rely on corporate donors. They've evolved from the old boys club models that basically started in the inner cities. Now, this model works great in those urban areas where there's a lot of corporations to give huge corporate donations. However, in rural areas like Lac-Couturier or Bad River or Menominee, there are really no corporations to seek donations from. Our clubs then become reliant on grants, which are very cyclic. We would like to see some of our gaming compact dollars go to fund operations of our tribal clubs. For kids that have become... Thank you. For kids that have become dependent on alcohol or drugs, the state and the tribes are working collectively to build and operate a juvenile treatment facility. We hope to centrally locate this facility, possibly in Lac des Flambeaux. Right now, our kids are being transported all over the place and sometimes at great distances. Drugs and drug-related crimes have also put a lot of people in jail and prisons. We've also been taking a look at programs within the Wisconsin prison system to assess their effectiveness. The Community Reintegration Program is one program that we've looked at, and I believe this program is effective. Through a tour, not because I was put there for any reason other than the tour, I got to see firsthand the educational and training opportunities that are being provided to inmates who must soon re-enter our communities. That money is spent on programs, in my opinion, is well worth it. The cost of housing an inmate is staggering. When an inmate receives an education or learns a trade, the data shows that they are less likely to reoffend and end up back in prison. Yes. This saves us a lot of money in the long run. Exactly. I say us, because besides our taxpayer dollars, gaming compact revenue is also used to fund these prison programs. We support the continued use of those dollars in that manner and think it is money well spent. I spoke earlier of how we don't hear many state officials speak of our tribal contributions to their respective missions. One such area is in the area that has been a topic of a lot of speeches lately. That area is jobs. I've heard speeches and presentations by Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development, chamber directors, economic board chairs, state of the state addresses. I have yet to hear about the tribal contributions to the state jobs numbers. Our numbers are a big part of the state's economy. In Sawyer County, Lac-Couturier entities are an economic force. The tribal government is the top employer in the county, with the LCO Casino Lodge and Convention Center being second. LCO also has several other prominent employers that make the top list. Our K-12 school, LCO Head Start, LCO Ojibwe Community College, LCO Health Center, LCO Development Corporation, which is our construction company. We also have three gas stations, a grocery store, the Landing Resort, and many more private businesses. Recently, we purchased Al Capone's Hideout and plan to make that a tourist attraction. When you take all the payroll taxes, vendor purchases from vehicles to napkins, and we shop local as much as possible. Our impact is in the millions. We contribute more to the local treasury than our area Walmart or McDonald's. And do they buy local? The rest of the tribal nations can boast similar impacts. Together, the tribes contribute over $1 billion in economic impact to this state. Well over. Yeah. Well over $100 million of that billion goes to federal, state, and payroll taxes. Add to that over $4 million of charitable contributions. We certainly are not the burden that some ignorant people say that we are. We do contribute our fair share to this state. We call on state officials to acknowledge our contributions every time they are mentioning their own. Not for the simple bragging rights, but for the opportunity to educate people and stop the myths that are extremely hurtful and demeaning to us, especially the myth that we are a drag or a burden somehow on the state, that we are all on welfare and taxpayer-funded programs. That myth is complete manure. I mentioned several areas in which we have good partnerships or relationships, but yes, there are a few areas in which we do not always agree. The areas of natural resource management and environmental protection are rife with differences, and for the life of me, I can't figure out why. These are areas where we have much in common and should be working hand in hand. Pristine water, clean air, lush woodlands, healthy and clean fish and wildlife populations benefit us all. Our state's overall public health and well-being, as well as a sustainable economy, are dependent on clean air and clean water and clean land. Tribal nations, though each separate and distinct, share the same reverence for the earth. We consider her our mother, who provides us with our sustenance and nurtures our spirit. We understand that every one of us is an integral part of the environment. We know that every one thing around us can survive without humans, but that we humans can not survive without our Mother Earth. What is detrimental to the environment is detrimental to us. I understand how easy it is to draw distinctions about tribes and the state approach to natural resource management. For example, our tribe manages fish for sustenance, while the state manages fish primarily for sport. I would venture to say that we all have heard at one time or another the debate surrounding the harvest ethic of tribes versus the sport ethic of the state. Frankly, I find this debate to be unproductive. It preys upon long-standing myths that somehow a dead fish at the end of a spear is different than a dead fish at the end of a rod and reel. Ultimately, and most important, this type of debate distracts us from the real issues that we must address together. Declining fish and wildlife populations, loss of spawning grounds, declining wild rice beds, invasive species, a changing climate and extreme weather conditions, and the toxic effects of pollution. We, the tribes and state together, must recognize that is no longer a matter of who gets to harvest which fish. It is much more urgent matter to make sure that fish remain to be harvested. It is incumbent upon us to protect rather than destroy habitat and to control pollution so that fish are safe to eat. Tribes are particularly attuned to the issue of who defines acceptable levels of pollution. This is because of our reliance on natural resources for much of our diet. For example, there are four major foods that we Ojibwe are required to have at all our feasts and funerals. These foods also make up a large portion of our non-ceremonial diets as well. The four foods are fish, deer, wild rice, and berries. If there are any contaminants in these foods, we're basically putting those contaminants right into our bodies, and they can bioaccumulate to harmful levels. We must stop destroying habitat and polluting our water and air. We must preserve what we have and restore what we've lost. We are witnessing the consequences of our failure to act when we have the science and should have the wisdom to know better. For example, we see dead zone in Lake Michigan in the Green Bay area, the toxic algal blooms in Lake Erie, the contamination of drinking water because of failure to control agricultural runoff and concentrated animal feeding operations. This is why LCO and other tribes strongly oppose measures like AB 600, which would permit the destruction of our wetlands and our wild rice. It's also why tribes are concerned about things like frack sand mining and the loss of local control over such operations. The proposed Pinoki mine and the legislative changes that accompanied that proposal. Uncontrolled shoreline development and the lessening of shoreline protections. I got a few more here, relax. Inadequate control of pollution and nutrients from cranberry operations, the continuing failure to effectively address chronic wasting disease in captive herds, thereby putting our wild herds at unacceptable risk, a proposed swine CAFO operation in the Shawamigan Bay region in a watershed that already is impaired by unacceptable phosphorus levels, and an apparent trend toward what I would call the privatization of public and tribal treaty resources for the benefit of a few and contrary to the state's constitutionally enshrined public trust document. Let's address these matters together to protect Mother Earth for everyone's well-being today and for generations to come. The tribes would rather fight with rather than battle against the state when it comes to protecting fish, maintaining clean air, maintaining clean water, and supporting fully functioning ecosystems and wetlands that provide healthy natural resource for us all. We must remember what we have in common and how we can overcome differences that some so vigorously try to exploit in an effort to divide us. It's better to seize upon similarities and tackle issues together rather than to separate and divide us by differences, actual or perceived. I wanted to not use this platform to stand up here and complain or bash, but there is one thing that's really got me shaking my head. Reading the newspaper last Saturday, I learned about the deer that were infected with chronic wasting disease that had escaped from a deer farm in Eau Claire County last year in May. In June, a CWD doe was found on that same property. Then in September, more animals escaped from that same farm. This disease poses a major threat to tribal and state harvesters alike, and for the life of me, I can't understand how this can keep happening. The tribes for several years now have been asking DADCAP and the DNR to work together to make sure these fences are escape-proof. We even offered to do the compliance checks ourselves. Now we have more escapes of CW deer from the captive herds. That's one head shaker, but to read in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that the deer farm owner, who to me is ultimately responsible for the deer escaping, was in fact paid $298,770 of DATCAP general fund revenue because his herd was destroyed. The money for that fund comes out of taxpayer dollars. That was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and you know newspapers and media are never wrong, right? Right? Well, if that was the case, we should all be shaking our heads at that. Is DATCAP an insurance company? My family, as well as many tribal families, rely heavily on venison. Chronic wasting disease worries the tribes greatly. We need a partnership with Wisconsin DNR, DATCAP, the tribes, and everyone in the state to pull together on fighting CWD. Again, not as all bad. Some examples of tribal DNR community partnerships in this regard are the Summer Youth Program and the fairly new Walleye Initiative, and the partnership between Glyphwick, St. Croix Tribe, the county, and the lake property owners on rehabilitating the wild rice on Clam Lake. Let these examples remind us not to waste money on attorneys. No offense if there's any attorneys in the room. We would rather put those money into the resource rather than settle our differences in court. Let's find ways to work together to support healthy communities that have a sustainable relationship with all the gifts that Mother Earth provides us. There are a number of venues where we can work together. For the Ojibwe tribes, we have the LCO versus Wisconsin case stipulation process. Some call it the Voight stipulation process. We at LCO call it the LCO stipulation process. For all of the tribes collectively, we have the Legislative Council Special Committee on State Tribal Relations. And thank you, Your Honor. And let's not forget about the tried and true government-to-government relationship that the state has or should have with each tribe. Good faith and fair dealings go a long way to destroy myths, build bridges, and strengthen our communities, as the examples I've noted illustrate. When it comes to Chippewa treaty rights, we need to make good use of the LCO case stipulation process. As I said earlier, the tribes are not historic relics. We are fully engaged natural resource managers and are constantly collecting data on our harvests, harvest methods, and the health of our natural resources and their habitats. When our biologists tell us there are more efficient ways to harvest that will not harm the resource, then those ways should be seriously considered by the state. The data we have today, coupled with the data the state has, is tremendous. I state regularly, and this is a fact, because of Chippewa treaty rights, we have better data on the resources in the ceded territory than ever before. It is biology and recommendations from the biologists that should drive decision making and not politics. I'd like to take this time to recognize the Executive Director of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission and thank him for all the great work that he and his staff do on behalf of our tribes and the people of this state. Jim Zorn, where are you at here? I know you're here. Wow, when I seen him way, way up in the back row, it reminded me of Bob Uecker. I must be in the front row. The Special Tribal State Relations Committee is the other venue that should be used more to find policy solutions between the state and the tribes. While there have been many successes, there are several issues that we are still working on. Some successes include the Glyphwick Warden Bill, tribal license plates, tribal charter schools, mutual aid, and Act 31 as it pertains to Native American education in our public school systems. We are still working on the Wisconsin Safe Haven Law. This law is extremely important to the tribes. The Safe Haven Law acknowledges the Wisconsin Indian Child Welfare Act. However, there are conflicts when it comes to Native American children being relinquished. Identifying information regarding the child is imperative in order for the child to become a member of their tribe. We must protect the best interest of Native American children to promote stability and security of our families. Another issue we face is the lack of full recognition of our tribal identification cards. In the past, tribal members who've had difficulty obtaining Wisconsin identification cards relied primarily on tribal IDs for their identification. This proved difficult acquiring such things as medicine from pharmacies, permits for conceal and carry, and even voting. Bill AB 130 may require a little additional work as the tribes would like to see tribal IDs fully recognized as a valid form of ID throughout the entire state. Current bill AB 704 will facilitate tribal college libraries to become public libraries, and we urge support for that. We got a librarian here. Yeah, all right. Don't shush us. I mentioned Act 31 in earlier remarks. This act, while a very good start, can be improved. It is only fair that a true representation of the tribes be shared with all of our children, so that they can appreciate the rich history of our state. The 11 tribes rooted in the state welcome the opportunity to assist in developing curriculum for our public schools so that it will reveal an accurate portrayal of the unique history of Wisconsin. Let's build upon those successes to make even more progress. A couple of issues that have been on the table that need a little shot in the arm are support for funding non-Indian students at tribal community colleges, the issue of tribal law enforcement officers' eligibility to be in state retirement system, and tribal registration of ATVs and snowmobiles. The issue of not being able to legally serve traditional foods such as venison, wild rice, or maple syrup in our Head Start schools and elderly centers is an issue we hope to make a priority. We're working with DADCAP and USDA, but this may be a tribal state relations committee issue as well. Hey, whoever's faster is what I say. We certainly understand food safety as a priority for the more susceptible populations, but logically speaking, for over 1,000 years, these foods made up such a large portion of our diets with no instances of outbreaks or sicknesses that changing those rules should worry no one. I would like to give a special thank you to the chairman of the Special Committee on State Tribal Relations, Representative Jeff Mersaw. There he is. There he is. and all the members of that committee for your work and dedication. And also, I'd like to recognize DADCAP Secretary Ben Bransel for your work with the traditional foods issue and all those other issues we talk about. Ben, Secretary, where are you? Brazilian author and educator Paulo Freire said, "Trust is established by dialogue." When we examine all of the successful partnerships and projects that we've done together, there is a common thread. That common thread is meaningful dialogue. I could go on and on, but I won't. And list more. Someone's clapping up there. Joe. Security. I could go on and on and list many more myths and misconceptions. I could also go on and contrast successful and not so successful partnerships. The most important point that I hope that I've made today, what I would like everyone to take from my remarks today, is that by increasing our dialogue and increasing our trust across all areas of the state-tribal relationship, we'll be able to dispel those myths and misconceptions. By increasing our dialogue and increasing our trust, we'll be able to move our state and our tribes forward to benefit all our citizens. The state of the tribes is good and getting better. We are alive and well in the 21st century, and we don't still live in teepees. Miigwech, Bizindawieg. Thank you all for listening.